This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Will my call stay on the line with you if I text somebody real quick?
It should. Go ahead and try it. I'm just typing something in.
I want to text my coworker real quick just to say...
Hi, Stooge.
Work later. In case I'm late. Can you hear that?
I can. That's like thumbs of fury. That is great. I mean, that would be considered like a high priority call that you're on when you're typing hard and fast. Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 133 of Within the Trenches, and this is a podcast based on the experience of being a 911 dispatcher. This episode is supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. Now, if you had the chance earlier today, today is Thursday, March 16th, I did a live video on the Facebook podcast page, and I was talking about the crazy sickness that hit my family just this past Sunday. It was pretty gnarly. I mean, if you've ever watched The Exorcist, or if you have seen the movie Stand By Me, there is a pie eating scene where this character, they call him Lardass, but his name is Davey Logan or something like that, or Hogan maybe. He ends up getting revenge on a bunch of people. He drinks some castor oil, has an egg, and he eats I don't know how many pies, but it turns into what they call in this movie a barf-a-rama. And, you know, I'm not trying to be gross or anything, but I know everybody has been through it. There was a crazy stomach bug that hit my family, and that's pretty much the way it was. We all got very sick, but I am back to work. I was back to work today, and doing this episode today, I feel a hell of a lot better, and my family does as well. Everybody who sent some well wishes and everything on the Facebook page, as well as Twitter and Instagram, thank you very, very much. I appreciate it. We're doing a lot better, and we've cleaned off the walls. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to get started here. In that video that I had, I talked about a lot of different things. So actually, before we get started, one thing I want to say really quick is that the Within the Trenches Continuing Education Scholarship for the 2017 Navigator Conference that is coming up here in just a few weeks, actually, the winner for the scholarship was chosen by my voting committee, and Ethan Harrison. Congratulations once again, my friend. He's out of Mecklenburg EMS, out of North Carolina, and he's going to be headed over to that conference. And what that scholarship ended up giving was a full registration pre-conference class, as well as a $500 travel stipend and an official Within the Trenches t-shirt, and is going to have a spot on the podcast to tell his 901 story. And you know, the big thing, really, I mean, he's going to be at this conference, the 2017 Navigator Conference, and I can't tell you how important it is to try your best to get out to one of those big national conferences, because the networking alone and, you know, the education that you'll get from that is priceless. So congratulations again, man. And for the other people who applied, thank you very, very much. It was a very hard decision, and it actually got heated there at the end when it came down to the decisions. So thank you very much. I'm going to try to do another scholarship for still for 2017, but it's going to be for the National NIDA Conference that is going to be out in San Antonio. So make sure to look out for that. And we've got decals. Decals are coming out. I mentioned that on the video as well. Trying to get those going. As I said, we were sick as hell, and now we're back at it. So we're going to get all of those out there. Some big ones that are coming out is the dispatch roll call vinyl decals, and those are the state ones. So we've got a list of states that we're going to be creating, getting out there, putting on the Code 7 dispatch apparel store. So look out for those. Those are coming up. Now, with all of that out of the way. I've got my guest today, and it's been pretty crazy. So this episode is supposed to start at 8 o'clock Eastern. It is 8:39 right now. And when I got home, I was trying to come home as fast as I could from work because I had stopped at the grocery store to get a couple things to make some carnitas or some shredded pork tacos. And we've got this badass Instant Pot. And this isn't an advertisement for them or anything. I just think that thing is freaking awesome. So I'll put that out there really quick. They're not paying me to say this. That piece of appliance is just badass. I love it that much. So when I come upstairs, though, to come into my home studio, I noticed that I don't have a plug for my headphones. So I had to haul ass to Sweetwater, where I usually get my stuff. Again, it's not a plug for them. They just have good stuff. And I had to haul ass over there. And when I got here, I was pulling into the driveway and sending my guest a message on Twitter saying that I was working on some wiring, which I was at the time. But I had to hurry up and haul ass back over here so that I could get everything hooked up because I wasn't going to be able to hear anything. So I'm hurrying, and it all just worked out because she ended up telling me that she was looking for a quiet place to be so that we could record this episode. And she's in a certain spot, which I'll let her say it here in a moment. We've been laughing this whole time. But my guest today is Kaylin, and she's a dispatcher. She's out of Northern California, and she's also a content creator. So she's the creator of a YouTube channel as well as Twitter, Facebook, and she's also on Snapchat now under the name You Married Me. And we're going to get into this. We're going to tell her 911 story, and she's going to talk about the content that she's been creating. So how's it going, Kaylin?
It's going great. I'm a little nervous, and I'm a little, we'll say, cozy here. As you mentioned, I found my little quiet spot.
Yeah.
I ran down to the police department to try and find an empty office, and I couldn't find one. So in a panic, I ran. Well, did not run. That's never seen. In a panic, I drove up to my parents' house, and I'm now sitting in their camping trailer where it's nice and quiet.
Now you're sitting in their camping trailer. However, you're sitting a specific way.
I am sitting on their bed facing the headboard because it's the only place where there's a light so I can read my notes. And it's a little crampy in here. So if you hear me moving around on the mattress, it's just because I'm getting a cramp in my leg or something.
Now, this is amazing because when I read your message back, you ended all I saw at a quick glance before I called you was that you were like sitting backwards or upside down or something like that in this camper. And I thought this is going to be a great episode already. I don't think I've ever had anyone send me a message or tell me that if they climbed up on the camper trailer, that they would be able to see the ocean.
Yes, we're really close to the Pacific Ocean. So if I climbed up on top of this trailer, I could probably see the ocean. It'd be at a distance, but we're very close and it's very cold. So,
well, that would be an excellent view. I can kind of see it, but if it's cold there, so when you say cold, how cold exactly is it?
It's probably right now. I don't have a,
or
it's
a guess.
Probably about 60 today.
Oh my gosh. 60. See,
I know that's not some places that's not very cold at all, but it has a bite.
Well, yeah, I can see that it would be cold there. Of course, especially if the wind is chilly and stuff, it bites your face. Me living in Indiana and actually growing up in Michigan, 60 degree weather is like t-shirt and shorts and flip flops. And when I moved from Michigan to Florida, when I was over there and it hit about 60 or so, even if it hit like 50 or 55, my brother and I would be in t-shirt shorts and flip flops. And my sisters would be in like turtlenecks or parkas. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? She's like, it's freezing. I was like, I guess you guys have lived here long enough that, you don't have that Michigan blood in you anymore. They're like, yeah, it's freezing. I'm like, man, I'm chilling here with my shorts on.
Yeah. There's a very small temperature range here where it's okay, this is normal. And then you go up a few degrees. When it's 70 degrees here, everybody's like dying. It's ridiculous, the difference.
Oh, that's funny. So we've been talking back and forth and stuff, and you had posted a video, I think it's about a month ago now, and this video is called Dispatcher Behind the Mic. And so this was about a month ago that you posted this. And since that time, you've gotten 9,247 views, which is freaking awesome. Now, did you think that that was going to happen when you first posted this?
No, I did not. I was very pleasantly surprised that people could relate to it. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of took off like wildfire. And I'm really excited to keep making more videos.
That's awesome. Now, before we get into your 911 story, I want to play this first video, because when I saw it, I was laughing like crazy. And I don't remember, I watched it a couple times, and I don't remember if I was actually sitting in my office or had headphones in during a meeting and listening at work, but I thought it was hilarious, and I thought, man, I gotta make sure to share this, because this is good stuff. And I like what you have in here, and I'm only gonna read these couple lines right here, but it says, "I love my job. I swear I do. But to stay sane, sometimes you just have to let it all out behind the mic."
Yep.
So true. I'm gonna play this here really quick.
Bad boys, what you gonna do when they come for you? Oh snap, you go into jail. What kind of name is that? Open mic.
I like
taking a deuce. She's lying through her f***ing teeth. Called it up top. Ooh. It's your lucky day, bitch. That escalated quickly. Yes, I dispatched medical. Yes, I dispatched fire. Oh, are we gonna have an attitude? You're my favorite. Can't get there.
I like the facial expressions that you have.
Hold down your mic. What the f*** are you saying? Better watch out. You better not cry. You're going to jail because you're a tweaker. Bring me snacks. Good boy. What a good little officer. I have to pee. Hang up on me one more time. I dare ya. I'm gonna find ya. I'm gonna get you good. Is the shift over yet?
Excellent. Now, if you can tell those who are listening, excuse me, what you have on your head. This is a filter that you've done in Snapchat, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So describe how you look in this video.
Oh gosh. I have huge eyeballs and bunny ears. And I love the voice change, because that makes it so much more funny.
Right.
You just hear this voice saying the things, it's blah. But I like to make a lot of facial expressions that are really exaggerated, because with the filters, they come out, you know, 100 times better. Eye rolls and the
yes.
glares that I give the camera. I mean, they're pretty spot on if you ever see me behind the mic for real. Unfortunately.
Oh, that's
I think
awesome.
That's kind of what stemmed these mm-hmm. videos anyway, is that right now we're super short staffed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find myself carrying a lot more stress, and that tends to come out behind the mic. And I started catching myself. I'm just thinking to myself, like, wow, did I really just say that? One of these days I'm going to have an open mic and I am just going to, you know, insert foot into mouth. It's going to be horrible.
Oh, but it happens to the best of us. That's what makes it so fun.
I've already had a few that are a little... I don't know. I had some people come up and talk to me about them later. So,
excellent.
We'll just leave it at that.
So, that's a good segue then into, how did you get into dispatching to begin with? I mean, so, because a lot of people that I've talked to, they've had times where, they just had people in their family or friends that were in law enforcement as well. So, did you have anyone there that kind of inspired you to do it, or was it just something you kind of fell into?
I think it was kind of something that I just fell into. Prior to me working there, my grandpa was a volunteer, but I don't think that's really what got me into it. I was working as a medical assistant, actually, and just finances and different stuff weren't really going the way that they needed to be going. And I saw that the fire department was recruiting for a dispatcher and testing. And so I went forward with it, and the rest is kind of history. I knew that I wanted to have a career where I'd be helping people, and the benefits are awesome. So I just kind of went from that point and excelled. It'll be 6 years next week.
Now, I have to call myself out on that right away, because in the video that I did live on Facebook, I said that you had only been doing it for like 3 or 4 years, and I had gotten you mixed up with another guest who had told me the 3 to 4 year mark. So my apologies.
Rude.
Oh, I know, right?
I'm just joking.
So, well, it's not as bad as another one that I did. Oh, man. There was an episode that I did about a week or so ago, and I could not remember... Mary was her name. I could not remember the actual name of the article that she had done. And I was doing it live again, and my wife was in this video with me, and I said, dispatch for the brain, or dispatch brain, or something like that. And it was dispatch on the brain. And, I completely screwed it up. So when I was talking to her, we had a good time. It was funny, but yeah, so there goes another one. I jacked that one up, but it's all good. So 6 years then. So what was it like when you first started out then? So you go in, you go through your hiring process. What was the training like?
I think, well, I would imagine similar to anywhere when you go from civilian life to dispatching life, it's training can be pretty intense. Mm-hmm. I bounced around from a couple of different dispatchers who had been there for a long time, and you know, there were some really great days, and there were some days where I just left crying, and it was none of the trainer's fault at all. It's just the nature of the career.
Right.
So I don't remember how long we were on training, but we followed the California Post guidelines. And now I'm actually later in the year, I'm going to be becoming a trainer. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Excellent. So yeah. Then with your, how long, you said you didn't know how long the actual training lasted, right?
I can't remember how many months.
And then, so when you were training though, how many people work at the same time as you? Like, how big is your dispatch center?
Well, right now we have, there's 5 positions when we're fully staffed. I should say 5 shifts when we're fully staffed. Mm-hmm. And we only have 2 dispatchers on, would be like the weekend nights. So any other time of the week, there's only 1 dispatcher in there. So it's pretty, pretty small agency. We have, let's see, our PD itself is really small. And then we're also contracted to dispatch for 2 other cities that neighbor us. And the combined population is about like 16 to 17,000 people combined.
Hmm. Okay.
So it's really small.
Right.
Our PD has, I think, 15 sworn officers, might be 16 now, because like, we've got a couple in training. And then we've only got 4 dispatchers on board right now, and one's actually going to be retiring in a couple of months. So we're going to be super short staffed. We'll have 3 dispatchers covering technically 5 shifts.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it'll be pretty tight. But fortunately, we have a really awesome supervisor who doubles as a sergeant. And so he's going to be helping out on a shift. And one of our other sergeants is also cross-trained.
Oh, awesome. So that definitely helps out then. So you guys aren't working like crazy overtime then?
Yes. So come May, I think each of those sergeants is going to work a shift. And then the rest of us are going to have still, I think I'll have at least 16 hours of overtime pay period or something like that. So it's not dire. We're making it work, but it's still going to be a long haul.
So when it gets busy, though, does it get pretty intense with you being there by yourself?
It can. Kind of comes in waves, like I think it does anywhere. Right now, I'm working the weekend night shift by myself. So I'd think that I probably have the craziest shift, and it's, you know, probably by 3 o'clock in the morning, it's kind of just all drained. Everybody's gone to sleep. So,
right.
But it comes in waves, and we have really supportive officers and staff. So, you know, if they can tell that we're getting beat to death, then they'll ease up on, you know, officer initiated stuff.
Now, this is going to sound like a off the wall question, but what happens when you have to use the restroom? Like, do you have to call over the radio to say, I'm going down the hall? Because the only reason I ask is because when I first started out in frostproof Florida at the small police department, it was just me for 8 hours. And if I had to use the restroom, I would have to call over the radio to say, I'll be 10-7 down the hall. And they knew that that meant I was going to use the restroom really quick.
I kind of wish we could do that, actually.
So you have a catheter or something, or?
Yeah, pretty much. We have a bucket.
Oh my God.
No. The officers will come in and sit in.
Oh, well, that's good then.
Yeah, it's nice. Usually lately I've been working with one of the two sergeants that are cross trained, so they're really competent in dispatch. Other times I kind of have to do a little catching up, but they're also awesome and totally supportive of coming in and helping us out because they know we're stuck in there for 12 hours. We do 12 hour shifts.
Oh man. Okay.
So they come in and cover for us for however long we need, which usually isn't that long. There's definitely been some close calls. Especially if they're going out on something that's high priority and they just cannot come back. It gets a little tense sometimes. Oh,
I can't wait for that video.
Oh gosh. To see. I was just talking to my coworker. She's like, I literally thought I would have to shit in a bucket. And she's going to kill me for saying this, but I'm not going to mention her name, but she's like, I need to go. And there was nobody to come back for her. So,
well, yeah. And I mean, what can you do? And I know, okay. So at the apartment that I was at, because it was a PD, people could walk in and, you know, the window's right there and I would be sitting there. And, so if I say I'm code brown or code 7 down the hall, I would play around and say code brown too. And so they would know, I would come back.
Extended.
Right. Exactly. You know, if I have a little bubble gut or something going, and if somebody can hear me when I go back out into the main area, sometimes there would be somebody standing there and they're just kind of looking at me like, oh my God, what the hell
and, did I just hear?
Right. And I'm like, hi, how can I help you? Like, do you need to call 911? I'm like, no, I'm fine. But yeah, that's why I was asking, because you were saying that it's, you know, a small center and stuff. And I was just wondering if somebody actually comes to relieve you, or if you just have to play the waiting game and pray that everything goes okay.
Yes. Someone comes to relieve me so that I can relieve myself.
There you go. Oh shit. That is funny. So damn, I lost my train of thought now where I was going with my next question. So when you had started and stuff, before actually you had gone in for, let's just say, your first day, and you were thinking about doing this, did you sit in with a dispatcher at all to kind of see what they did, or did you just jump in, get thrown in at, you know, the lion's den?
I don't remember sitting in. I think I just jumped into testing. I might have sat in between testing and starting, but now that you mentioned it, I just never really thought about it. I don't think I did.
What about any ride-alongs?
No ride-alongs until I was hired.
Ah, excellent. Okay, well then, when you were hired, you did some ride-alongs.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Now, those were fun. When I did my ride-alongs, one of the ones that I'll never forget is I rode with a trooper who's also, he was a canine, and he wasn't a canine. He was a canine trooper. And he was the coolest guy. When I got there to the state post, they didn't ask me if I wanted a vest or anything. I just remember signing a waiver. And I thought, oh, okay, all right, I got to do this for work, so I'm going to sign it. I wasn't even thinking about it. And afterwards, he had said, you know, if you wanted one, you could have just asked. And I thought, oh, well, I guess I didn't think about it at the time. But, you know, we end up taking off, and the first thing that he goes to do is he has to arrest someone. And right before we pull up, he goes, do you want to do it? And I said, do I want to do what? And he goes, do you want to be the one to arrest her? And I said, well, can I do that? And he goes, I can like deputize you right here. I can do it. I said, are you serious, man? Are you messing with me? And he goes, no, he goes, I can do it. And I was like, ah, well, I don't know. I'll let you do this. I want to watch you do it first. And he's like, all right. He goes, but I got to show you this. So he showed me each one of his weapons that were in the car. And he goes, if you need to use one of these, I'm showing you so that you can back me up. And I said, what? I said, are you serious? And he goes, yeah. He goes, you know, it's like the whole Good Samaritan thing. He goes, if you see me in trouble, you better get your ass out here and help me out. And I said, oh, okay, I'm all about it, man. Let's do this. So I was all pumped. And then we go to arrest this girl, and I don't remember what kind of warrant it was. It was something small time. But we walk in there, and I'm standing in there with him, and her boyfriend comes out, and he's like, whoa, whoa. He goes, don't come up on us like that. My partner over here will take you out. And I'm like, hey, I don't want to get into a fight. So it was hilarious though. And he was joking with them. They knew him. I didn't know that he knew them that well. And he's fucking with me. And so we end up taking her, you know, and we're just talking and stuff. And he's kind of telling me, because I was in training during this time. So, you know, for my training, I had to do three ride-alongs. And, you know, we were chasing people down. He was sitting stationary. And then there was a Porsche that went by. And he goes, we're going to go get that one. And I thought, okay. But it was busy on the highway. I didn't think we were going to catch him. And he goes, do you think we'll do it? And I said, nah, I don't know, man. There's too many cars that have passed by. And he goes, okay, just watch. And he whipped it around and we hauled ass. And he was going. He had the light going. And we caught up to that Porsche. And I was trying not to piss myself because I was freaking out. I was holding on to the oh shit grip as we're hauling to get this guy. And he caught him and he gave him a fat ticket. And he goes, see, I told you. I was like, man, that was amazing. That was good stuff.
Should have put money on it.
I would have lost.
No, he should have put money on it.
Oh, yes, he should have put money on it. But, you know, at the very end, though, we're talking and he's got his dog out there and he goes, I want to show you something. And I said, okay. And he gives me this tennis ball. And he goes, put it behind your back. And I said, all right. And he throws out some command in some other language that I have no idea what the hell he was saying. And his dog comes up to me and is chomping at my face almost. I mean, I can hear his teeth chomping and hitting each other. And it took everything in me not to shit myself because I was scared. And he's talking to me and he's like, look at me as I'm talking to you. I was like, man, I don't want to take my eyes off of this dog. And he goes, no, you'll be fine. I haven't given him the command to kill you. I'm like, what? and he's laughing. And we stood there long enough on that one command that the dog even got bored, or it seemed like it got bored, because he just like, he stopped. He stopped barking and he walked away. And I think he did it on purpose, because then he said it again and the car was on the dog was on the other side of the car and comes running back at me and starts barking again. I'm like, all right, man. I was like, you gotta chill out. And I'm freaking out here again. And he goes, okay. And he stops the dog. The dog's just sitting there. And then he goes, I've got another command. He goes, but I need you to do this with the ball. He goes, I want you to throw it. I want you to throw it away, like up in the air. He goes, but you got to do it fast because the dog's going to get it and he's going to take your hand off if you don't do it fast enough. And he goes, you trust me, right? I was like, I guess. I was like, you're a trooper, man. Of course I do. Yeah. So I put my hand out. I pulled the ball from behind me and I go to throw it. And as soon as I go to throw it, he gives this command and the dog snatches the ball, almost gets my finger. And I almost freaked out and I just stood there and he goes, how was that? And I was like, you know what? I think I got to go home. And I think it's time to go.
Like, I got to go Code Brown.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Code Brown 10-2 and 3, maybe. I don't know. But it was a good time. All of my ride alongs were really good.
It sounded like a great time.
Yeah, it was definitely a good time. I have to write more about those stories because there was some excellent stuff that happened on each one of those ride-alongs. Now, when you were doing your ride-alongs, though, did anything crazy happen or were you just kind of chilling there?
For the most part, it was pretty low-key. But I always like them because even the non-urgent contacts that people make or the officers make, I like seeing how the officer is on the street versus how I know him personally. Because they're so small that we know our officers really well. You know, my kids have play dates with their kids. You know, I see all of my officers. I know some comm centers, they don't see their officers at all. So it's always really interesting for me to see almost like the two different personalities. You have to have a professional personality, you know, and authoritative. And then there's the other side where I know that he's just a goofball. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, they become family, you know, it's your second family and everything. We used to hang out with them all the time. And the first time that I hung out with the deputies that I work with on my team on my night shift, I started pulling like kind of pranks and stuff. And I think that's what pulled me into the group more is because they thought I was cool, I guess, or something. I don't know. But, you know, and I started doing the meow thing on the radio. And, you know, there was a lot of different things that I did that kind of really pulled me into this group where, I don't know, maybe they thought because I kind of didn't give a shit. Even though I loved my job and I took it seriously, I still knew how to kind of have fun and have fun with them. So, you know, they could trust me. So the first time I went to hang out with them, we were playing pool at one of our buddy's house. And they have like a case or two of Miller Lite because there was a bunch of us there. And they gave me one. And I crack it open and I take a swig and I'm just kind of standing there like, all right, this is okay.
Did we just become best friends?
Right. Exactly. Yes. Add me on Facebook. and they're talking and stuff, but I still felt weirded out. And one of the guys goes, hey man, you're just like nursing that beer. I'm like, it's kind of weird. I've never had a beer with officers before. And they're like, man, we're just like you. And I was like, I guess. So I had a couple other drinks. And then the guy who owned the house had gone upstairs to get something from his fridge. And he comes downstairs and it's a little mason jar with foil on it. And I was like, what the hell is that? And everybody's taking a swig. And it got to me and I said, what the hell is this? And they said, well, it's called apple pie. I was like, apple pie? They said, yeah, it's apple pie. And I said, okay, well, it's liquid, so it's not apple pie, or at least the apple pie that I know. And they said, well, it's moonshine. And I said, oh, I've never had that before. And they said, well, take a sip. So I took a very small sip. And they said, no. Take a swig. Take a bigger sip than that. So I did. And, oh, man, it tasted amazing. And then it started to burn. And and they're laughing at me. And I said, how much was the proof on that? And they said, you don't want to know. And I said, oh, well, hell. So I didn't have any more of that Miller Lite. I was good with what I had. I drank water for the rest of the time. And I ended up staying the night there. But it was a good time. I mean, it was, like I said, we became like a family and stuff. But that very first time, it was weird because I had never hung out with officers like that before. And so it was kind of weird at first, but it was all better after the apple pie, I guess.
Oh, man.
So going back into, you know, the beginning when you started and everything, what about a call that stuck with you, or maybe like your first high priority call, you know, when you were by yourself, when you were finally done with training, something that you had taken?
Okay. So I have to reiterate that I was born in this town and raised in this town. And so, you know, just our town alone, I think is close to 12,000 people. I mean, it's pretty small. Everyone knows everyone. You can't go to the store without seeing at least 5 people that you know personally.
So how many...
sometimes I actually just like, you know, take the other aisle in the market so that I don't have to make another conversation.
So how many people know that you're actually in that trailer right now? Because it's so small.
you, my parents, and my husband.
Awesome.
So I haven't spread too much of the trailer info. Can you hear me moving around? Gosh, this is awful.
No, actually, it's not coming over at all. So
okay, good. It's
go
a
ahead.
Crunchy mattress. That sounds bad.
Crunchy. Okay.
bad adjective. Anyway, so I know, you know, so many people that we deal with. I want to say probably 40% of the people I know one way or another, the people that we have contact with. And actually this, the first one that I had, it was my first weekend off of training. And like I said, small station, literally nobody in the station with me. And I got my first, I would consider, a high priority call. And it was a 911 and a female screaming, and I couldn't understand what she was saying. And, you know, of course, me being a newbie, my heart is pounding. My blood is racing. I'm trying to calm her down and get the information. And I determined that somebody had just broken into her boyfriend's house where they were both at. And apparently she was explaining that he was pistol whipped by two suspects. And so I asked her if she knows them, because the likelihood that she knows him in this town are pretty large. Mm-hmm. And she told me the names of the two suspects, and my heart just dropped because they were two people I had grown up with. And I just, when you're in that situation, you're trying to remain professional, but you're like, what's happening? You know, I want good things for all the people that I know.
Right.
So hearing that this is happening, it's kind of devastating. I think that was the first call where I was like smacked in the face with reality.
Right.
You know, and being in a small town, you're so sheltered. You don't see, when you're in civilian mode, you don't see the crime or anything that happens. You just see people, and you know how you know them. You know them in a certain aspect. You don't know them in their personal lives, I guess. That's hard to explain. Anyway, so I'm on the phone with her still. And then she gives me, you know, more of her information and the victim's information. It turns out that I know both suspects and the victim and went to school with all three of them. And oh, so, man. Again, trying to remain professional, get all the information that I need, you know, send the officers out there as quick as I can. And I'm just still kind of in this stoop. Like, I didn't expect this, I guess. I think that was the first call where it kind of hit me in the head, like, this is going to happen more than once. You know, I'm living here, I was raised here, and I'm working here now. I need to expect this more often.
Yeah, exactly.
So the officers went out there and, you know, they handled their business. There was no other incident. Nobody died or anything. Fortunately, it was just that. And then I think it ended with a couple arrests, but that first initial adrenaline and just knowing the names, it just kind of, you know, keeps a place in my heart, definitely. And I think that everybody now is doing well, and I'm hoping that they're continuing in a positive direction. But it was also my first little atta girl that I got from my sergeant. So I was really excited about that. Apparently I did a decent job. So.
Oh, excellent. That's always good to get, you know, I mean, cause it's a thankless job, and you don't always expect to get a big thanks or a note or anything like that. So something, even if it's just small, to get an atta girl or atta boy, that always makes you feel good. So that's awesome that you got something.
Gosh, it means everything. Now I can't remember the last time that I got one. What does that say about me?
It has been 6 years.
Oh, no. Well, I have had one since then. I'm just saying I can't remember the last time.
I know.
So. Oh, man.
So, and that's a hard thing for, you know, for people who are listening that don't understand really. I mean, if you are working in a place that you grew up and, you know everyone, you know, pretty much like you're saying, mm-hmm. that's hard because you are going to end up taking a call like that. So in your 6 years, you know, if you can say, how many calls do you think you've taken where it's been people that you've known that you've had an episode like that where you've had that adrenaline rush? Because the last dispatch center that I worked at, Allegan County Central Dispatch, I grew up in Allegan County. So on the west side of that county, I knew everyone. And I grew up in a small town called Finnville. And whenever there would be calls that would come in from that area, they were people that I knew. There were people that I grew up with. There were people that I was friends with, also family from there. And when I would hear certain names, or if it was, you know, and I'm across the room and someone else is taking the call, or I'm the one taking the call myself, it was that oh shit moment, that adrenaline mm-hmm. rush of, I know these people, and do I tell them who I am? Or, you know, do I say my first name? You know, and when I was in school, everybody knew me as Rich, but my actual name is Ricardo. So when I was, when I switched more into professional working mode, I went by my first name of Ricardo instead of Rich. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so nobody really knew me when I would say, this is Ricardo. And then I would have to think, oh, they don't know me as Ricardo. And I would have to, you know, walk that line of, if I tell them this is Rich and they realize who I am, they're either going to be calm and they're going to tell me more of the story, or they're going to get embarrassed and they're not going to tell me anything. So exactly. There was always that thing in the back of my head of, do I do this or do I not?
Yeah. So I mean, when we answer an admin line, a non-emergency line, it's our policy that we say our name. And so that's one thing, but when we're taking 911 calls, we're not going to introduce ourselves, you know, for the most part, unless you're on the phone for an extended amount of time and you think it'll comfort your caller, then you might disclose your name. But I've had several calls. Like you asked me how many I thought I knew on a personal level, and I don't think I can count, because there are so many. And on 911, I mean, I do my job. I've had my best friend call because there was this guy loitering at her house and banging on the door just crazily and refusing to leave. And, you know, so she called 911, and I can't slip into friend mode and say, oh my God, run.
Right.
I have to remain calm and be that calm voice for her. And then direct her, you know, safety measures and make sure that the officer gets out there quickly. And then, you know, afterward, she texts me and she said, are you working? And I'm like, yeah, are you okay? You know? But it's definitely a really, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, that call could have gone way, way, way south. And I'd be the one who's taking that call for my very best friend. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it makes it that much more personal. That, you know, when you're taking these calls, and of course, like you were saying, you don't break down and you start being, you know, the bestie. You got to stay in that professional mode, because that's mm-hmm. your job. That's what you're doing. However, what people don't know, and maybe this isn't for you, but a lot of people in the back of your head, you're thinking, oh shit, you know, this mm-hmm. is my friend, but you know, you're there for her, but through your voice, it's completely different. See, that's the thing that makes, you know, dispatchers unique, is you've got the two, you know, emotions going at the same time. You're multitasking, even in your head, you're multitasking with your emotions. You're being completely firm and professional, but in the back of your head, it's that, oh shit moment where you're like, I got to make sure I'm doing this to my best, because this is someone that I know. And it's going to make it that much
exactly
more personal.
That's exactly right. I think that's actually very similar to what I text back to her. It was, hey, sorry, I was so monotone just doing my job, but I swear I'm feeling for you the whole time, you know. And all my friends are really understanding about that. They know that if they call 911, the likelihood of them getting me, especially because we're short staffed, is pretty high. So,
right.
Yeah.
Now,
another one actually. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was gonna ask you if they ever ask you what like your worst call or funny call is, because they know you. Do they ever ask you, or do they know that they shouldn't ask?
Not really. They don't usually call or ask that. I think they've sometimes kind of hinted, and I'll kind of offer it to them. But I don't think I've had somebody directly say that, because it's a sensitive topic, and I have pretty sensitive friends that are awesome. So I uh-huh. think they know that you can't just dive in and bring stuff up randomly.
Right. Exactly. Unlike some of the people that I would talk to when I'm just getting my haircut, and they're like, oh man, that sounds interesting. Yeah, it was pretty cool job. And so what was your worst call? Really? As you're cutting my hair, I don't want you to slip and cut my hair off or anything, because you know,
or you never know if that dispatcher really had a hard time with their worst call. You know, I mean, you might be triggering something.
Right.
Why would you want to make them relive that?
Right. Exactly. Now, I can say that I've heard more than what was your worst call or craziest call was what was your funniest call. And I always go back to the naked guy in stilts that a friend of mine had taken. But I think I've gotten that one. That one more than anything else. But you were going to say that
images.
You had, oh, I know. Yeah. This was a little old man who was calling, who was freaking out, and she asked him what was wrong. And he goes, there's this guy naked on stilts walking back and forth in front of my house, in front of my living room. He was so horrified. But of course I had to listen on the line and monitor it as well, because it was amazing. But you were talking about a call actually just before I'd asked you that other question Or you said you had another call that you that you wanted to share.
Yeah, I had another call. I was about a year in. And when you're a year in, I mean, you know how to move around and stuff, but I think you're still, you know, you're new. You're still fresh. There's some calls that you may have not handled yet. So I consider, you know, even with 1 year under your belt, you're still got a lot of ways to go before you're competent dispatcher. And one of the ones that I got that really stayed with me was a suicide call, and it was a 911. And fortunately at this time we were full staffed. And so I had a second dispatcher with me. Actually, she was previously one of my trainers. I got a 911 from this young woman, and she was just screaming. And it's one of those blood curdling screams where your hair just stands up right then. And you have to think for a second, what should I ask her? What should I do to calm her down? Because sometimes you can't, because people are so emotional.
Right. And that's at a split second.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, if I listened back to that call, I probably wasn't even sitting there for a second, but it felt like a lifetime because I can feel the emotion through the phone. And it turns out that I actually grew up with her little sister. So again, a personal contact. Mm-hmm. And she was screaming again, difficult to understand. And I had to calm her down and try to make sense of what she was saying. And it was determined that her boyfriend had fatally shot himself, and she had witnessed this. And so just from our history with her, I assumed that it was her boyfriend, the father of her child. And so we had everybody headed out there. You know, at that point in our town, it just depends if you really want to ask, you know, names and stuff. At that point, we know that the gun is no longer a threat, and you know, she's distraught. We're trying to get people out there. Well, a few minutes later, my supervisor at the time, she's not my supervisor anymore, but my supervisor at the time calls on the non-emergency line and asks if we're out with her son. And I was kind of confused. I was like, what are you talking about? I was just talking to a female. And it turns out that this woman was actually dating my supervisor's son, and he had taken his own life.
Oh man.
So now I took, you know, the 911 for her son's death, and now I have her on the private line. And I'm just, that time I probably froze for a good few seconds because I didn't know what to say. So I ended up throwing her on hold, and I'm just shaking. And I look over to my former trainer and tell her it's our supervisor, and she thinks this, do we have a confirmation yet? And we hadn't. I don't know if we had or not. I think my partner ended up calling somebody on scene and confirming that. And so that's one that probably the biggest one that hit me as far as working in a small town. I mean, what are the odds that I would end up taking that call?
Right.
You know, and it having such an emotional impact on me and my supervisor. Jeez. Which I actually have an extra appreciation for Within the Trenches, for you inviting me onto the show, because I went to her and discussed me mentioning this on your podcast. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this call and how it affected each of us for the first time 5 years later.
Wow.
Yeah. So we never really spoke of it. We just didn't. And I don't even know if she knew that I took the call until a couple of weeks ago when I was talking to her about the podcast.
Wow. That's very powerful. So all these years later now, you guys finally got a chance to talk that out. Now, did you feel better? I mean, for the both of you, I'm sure there was, you were able to, you know, actually get it out, which was probably a good, I mean, did you guys have a debriefing or anything or during that time?
I don't think so. No, I never went to any sort of briefing. I don't know if the officers or the supervisor did any sort of briefing just for her sake. But I never did. I never heard of any. So that was kind of our debriefing just a few weeks ago. And so, yeah, it was really powerful. And actually we ended up hugging, which I don't know that we've ever done. So it was a good talk. And that's why I'm really glad that I got to talk about it today.
Wow. That, man, I've got goosebumps. That's, I'm going to say that's awesome, but I only mean that's awesome that you guys were able to get that out and talk about that. That's what I mean by saying awesome. I'm not saying the situation. Anybody who's listening to this, please don't think that that's what I'm saying.
It's full of awe.
Right.
Yes.
And that is good. I mean, that is exactly why I started, you know, doing this and having people come on, because I found it therapeutic to be able to talk to other people and write about this, and to hear you say that with this specific call and that you guys were able to get that out. That's amazing. That's very powerful.
Yeah, it was awesome.
That's good.
A good feeling to kind of have that closure.
And you said that was 5 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Wow. That's great. Now to segue from that call to now, cause we're going to be going into, the wrap up here, because you actually have to go into work here pretty soon. And, I want to talk about your channel and You Married Me. You know, what was your inspiration for this? Cause there's a lot of funny stuff that you have in here, and you know, the way you were talking, just, you know, how it comes out from you being there at your dispatch center and stuff. How did this all come about?
Well, I had made a few Snapchat filters are hilarious, and so I had made a few little short videos and shared them with coworkers and my husband, and they all thought that they were funny. And of course my husband, he's just kind of shaking his head like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, what? You married me? So that kind of just light bulb.
Perfect. Right.
Yeah. Maybe that'll be the name that I go with. And it kind of just took off from there. A lot of my coworkers are super supportive of it. Actually, I had my current supervisor was like, texting me the other night. He said, I can't sleep. I think it's just, I'm too anxious and excited in anticipation for your newest video. I'm like, yeah, sure. I just, you know, when you're by yourself in dispatch, and especially when things kind of slow down, there's some time and you have to entertain yourself somehow.
Right.
And I think it's really important. I had somebody comment on one of my videos, and it was a negative comment, you know, about how I'm going to get written up or fired because it's a waste of department equipment and pay. And, you know, I completely understand that idea, but we are a very small comm center, and there's a lot of downtime, and I don't do any of that stuff unless I'm done with all of my other work. And obviously everything that I do comes second to my work.
Right.
So, you know, I had somebody say, can't believe they're just sitting there recording. Well, I'm not. I don't know how many times I took a snap and then the phone rings in the middle of it. And so I just trash that one, handle my call. And then when it gets quiet again, I might try another shot. But I think it's what that person doesn't maybe realize is that, you know, most of my followers on Facebook are emergency responders. Mm-hmm. And that includes dispatchers, obviously, because they're the first responder.
Right. Exactly.
I am 911.
Yeah. Thank you. Very nice.
So I feel like it's important for people in our field, though, to be able to have a sense of humor about the job. You know, everyday officers and dispatchers and any other first responders go out and they deal with the worst of the worst, and they deal with the negative stuff. So I feel like my videos can hopefully bring them a little laughter and a little positivity. You know, there's lots of organizations out there that support humanizing the badge and stuff, and that's mostly directed towards officers. Well, dispatchers are human too.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So I think my biggest point of the videos is just to entertain people and, you know, bring some smiles and some laughs. And so far I've had mostly, like I said, there was that one comment, but I feel like everybody else has been so supportive of me, and I get messages from page followers, and I've made a couple really cool friends already, including you know, an awesome tow truck diver who pretty much told me how to use Snapchat because I'm a little challenged. And another follower who encouraged me to start Snapchat. So, you know, it's all kind of fan geared, and I hope that we can keep going with it because, you know, it's a positive thing, and it's positive for me in my own personal experience with it too.
See, and that's awesome. Cause that's, you know, it's pretty much like a grassroots type thing. You know, you're not getting paid to do it or anything. You're doing this for fun, for humor. And for the person who told you or put that comment on there, I had a recent comment as well that I can definitely relate to with you, what you were just saying. You know, somebody had mentioned me on Twitter saying that myself, and I'm not sure which episode it was that she heard, but she had said that we laugh too much at the people, you know, the 911 tapes that are being played at their expense or whatever. And I was telling that person that in order to make it through this type of job, you have to have a dark sense of humor. And that when we're laughing at some of those tapes are outrageous calls. They are not calls where people are getting murdered or anything. There are calls where people are calling because their food isn't cooked right, or their kid is being unruly or whatever. And with that as well, with people calling saying that their kid is, they're not able to discipline them or control them or something. I know for a fact, because I've taken these calls where there are kids that, you know, have health issues or they're autistic or something like that, that they do need some sort of assistance. So I don't make fun of that, but there have been a couple tapes that I've played where it's obvious that this is not that situation. So
exactly.
For people who have heard those, you know, we're not making fun of the situation because, you know, somebody is actually hurt or there's a medical issue or something like that. This is something, it's an outrageous type thing. And it's just sense of humor. It's dark humor and it's what's needed, or you end up crying most of the shift. And I'm sure you can agree with that, which is why you do these videos, which are very funny and I dig them.
Absolutely. It's, you have to have a sense of humor. It's a coping mechanism. It really is, because there was a distinct point when I started where, you know, I was, there's like Citizen Kaylin, and then I started dispatching, and, you know, a few weeks in, I felt jaded. You know, you get hit with all this reality. I don't know how many people I've talked to about different calls that I've taken who aren't in law enforcement, and they tell me, wow, I had no idea there was so much crime here. I'm like, yeah, there is. There's a lot of dark crap going on behind the scenes.
Right.
And, you know, I'm the one who has to hear it along with my colleagues. But in order to get through that, I mean, if you're just stooping in all of this negative, you know, vibes, you're going to go to a really dark place.
Right. Exactly. And then on the other side of that, there's all of the non-emergency calls that come in on emergency lines sometimes, you know, loud music, or even just what are the parade times? What are the fireworks times? There's all this bullshit that comes in on 911 as well as non-emergencies. I remember when I was working in Florida, there was a lady who called because the family, or actually the group of guys who lived across the street from her, she said the group of Mexicans that are across the street from me are playing their Mexican music so loud that I can't sleep. And she says, you know, you can understand me, right? And I said, oh yes, I can, exactly, because I'm actually Mexican and I listen to that music sometimes. And she goes, oh my God. And she goes, what was your name? And I said, my name is Ricardo. And she goes, you don't sound like a Ricardo. And I started laughing and I said, well, I apologize. I said, but I am. I said, but I'll get an officer out there to tell him to turn it down. I said, and she kind of chuckled and she goes, you know, don't worry about it.
Oh my goodness. I said, that's funny that you say that, because I get that complaint like weekly.
Of loud music?
Mariachi music.
Yeah, nice. You got the dun 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 dun. Oh gosh. Yes. So with that being said, really quick before we go into the wrap up here, you have got actually a video on 911 non-emergencies that I'm going to play here. And it's just, it's a minute 55. So I'm going to go ahead and play this.
911, where is your emergency?
Yeah, I need an officer over to my house right away. My 9-year-old is not listening to me, and I told her to go to bed.
Well, which of you is the adult in the house?
Well, she is out of control. Like, I can't control her.
And why is it a cop's job to parent your child?
The look on your face.
911, where is your emergency?
Yes, I need the fire department to come out as soon as possible. My cat is stuck in a tree.
Ma'am, have you ever seen a cat skeleton in a tree?
That is perfect, by the way.
No.
That's because cats always find their way down. I'm sorry, we're not going to send the fire department out.
Well, fine.
911, where is your emergency?
Yeah, I need a ride. I'm at the bar.
I'm sorry, this is not an emergency.
The filter for your drunk is great.
And I pay taxes, so
this is totally based off a true story.
I need a ride.
That makes it even better.
Sorry, we're not a taxi.
Well, you have to, all right? I pay taxes. I pay for your salary.
You know what? I'm going to send you an officer, and we're going to give you that ride, okay?
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Bye-bye. Hey.
Then it shows the person in a drunk tank. That's awesome.
My evil laugh.
Now, are these bloopers at the end?
Yes. And I only added a few of them because, like I said, I don't know how many takes I take. Like each scene that I do, there are so many that I delete. It's ridiculous.
When I was watching it and then it ended, I looked and I thought, oh, there's still more playing when I saw this the first time. And then I realized you were doing bloopers and that made it even better.
I decided to do that on a whim and I was like, let's see what happens. Cause I thought it was pretty funny when I just started busting up laughing. That's me entertaining myself. Nobody else in the room and I'm just laughing at myself.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, going into the wrap up of this, for those who want to find you on social media, how can they find you? Where should they go?
So the easiest place is probably Facebook and just facebook.com/ You Married Me. And my You Married Me name on all of my social media is all one word, You Married Me, just all squished together. YouTube is the same, youtube.com/ You Married Me. Snapchat, You Married Me. And Twitter, You Married Me. It's all the same. I try to do that so it's easiest to find me.
Excellent. That'll be very easy to find you. So everyone who is listening, make sure to go and check her out. She's got some excellent videos there. And, you know, on Facebook and, well, even Twitter, I mean, you're posting up, you know, different posts all the time. And I enjoy reading them. So thank you very, very much for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for what you do. I think it's an awesome cause.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much. And you are welcome on the podcast anytime you want. This has been a good time. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Ricardo.
For those who are listening, we are now going into my outro piece of this. And it seems to get longer every time. So I'm gonna go through this. Hopefully I don't bite my tongue like I have in the past trying to say all the shit that I have to say. But if you have any comments or questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email me, and that's going to be wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, and that's going to be @91podcast. You can like us on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And you can also find me on Instagram as well as Snapchat, and I believe they're both WTT podcast, that you can find me both on either one of those. There's a lot more guests coming on, and it's gonna be big, and there's a lot of things that are coming. Also, I talked about the class that I'm going to be doing at the Navigator Conference, as well as Indiana Nina, and that's going to be Within the Trenches, Imagine Listening. So what's going to happen is, for those who are coming to this class, either one of those, there are going to be index cards, and you will write down your I Am 911 story. You will not write down your name or anything, but you will put your I Am 911 story on there. I will collect all of them. And then at one point towards the end, I'm going to hand them all back so that everybody can remain anonymous still. I'm going to have people come up and read an I Am 911 story, but it's going to be a different one from the one that they wrote. And we're going to record this for an episode of Imagine Listening. So make sure that you have your stories ready. This episode, as well as all the others, are supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. And this episode, along with all the others, can be heard 24/7 on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play Music. There's more. Trying to think of them all. iHeartRadio, I think I already said that one, and thejabberlog.com. Have a good one, everyone.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.